For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is November the 5th. We are on page 664 in Parashas Kedoshim. Pasuk Lamed Gimel, verse 33. V'chi yagur itcha ger ba'artzachem, when a convert will live with you, will sojourn with you, is what it literally means, in your land. Lo so nu o so, you shall not afflict him. How do they translate it as?
Taunt him.
Okay. The word tonu, which comes from the word ona'a, there are various forms of ona'a. Ona'a means to hurt somebody, to afflict somebody. It can be done monetarily and it can be done verbally. In this context, it is referring to verbal pain. That's why they translate it as taunt. It's not the literal translation of the word tonu, but in this context, that is what it means, that one should not verbally hurt the convert. Now, a convert is always called, the verb for living is yagur, which means he'll sojourn, as opposed to yeshev. Yeshev means to dwell. To be gar means to sojourn. It's a mistake of modern Hebrew that the word lagur means to live. That is not the correct translation of the word lagur. Lagur means to sojourn. To sojourn means to not be a permanent resident. That's what it means. Mm-hmm. So a ger, a convert, is always referred to as sojourning because the convert doesn't have land in Eretz Yisrael. He can never have permanent land in Eretz Yisrael. He's always living on somebody else's land. And that's why it's referred to as sojourning. And therefore, as much as we certainly are told many times, and this is one of the places, to treat a convert properly and not to mistreat a convert, and that's a basic tenet of Torah, and we're warned about it many times in the Torah, nevertheless, it's not that the convert ever becomes quote-unquote mainstream, because the convert never has land. Neither the convert, nor the convert's children, nor grandchildren, nor great-grandchildren, they never have land. If you didn't come out of Egypt, then you don't have land in Israel. So the dream of the convert becoming somehow invisible within the Jewish people never happens. Now it happens with daughters that are born, females, because they can marry into the mainstream of the Jewish people, and then their children. If a woman who converts marries someone from the tribe, for example, of Naphtali, then her children are from the tribe of Naphtali, and her sons will have land. But a convert who has a son, and that son has a son, and that son has a son, and that son has a son, even 20, 30, 40, 50 generations, they never have a land. They never have their own land in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the danger of mistreating a convert lasts. It's an ongoing danger. Now, today, it's much less so because none of us have land, because we're not in Eretz Yisrael. And even those who are don't have the land the way that it's prescribed in the Torah. However, if we are living in Eretz Yisrael in the proper manner, then a convert is known. He never becomes, even after many generations, never becomes lost in the mix and quote-unquote mainstream to the point where you can't know that they were converts. You always know this family was a family of converts. It's not, does not fit with what we would consider to be our ideal in the culture that we live in. The American culture we live in promotes assimilation in every way, that everybody becomes one happy family, and there is no discerning between peoples. But But that's not the case with a convert in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the Torah commands us regularly to treat a convert properly, because it's so easy to mistreat a convert, because even after 10 generations, you still know who was a convert and who wasn't.
But you're not allowed to remind him of that.
Well, that's what we're going to get to. That's part of what the Torah is saying over here. Mm-hmm. But it is true. You know that he is. Yeah.
So, Rabbi Pransky, what about the tribes of Reuven and Gad and part of Manasseh?
What about them?
So, they chose to have land outside,
mm-hmm,
on the other side,
mm-hmm,
of the Jordan. So, did they have property given to them in Eretz Yisrael?
No, that is their land.
So they don't have land.
They have land on the other side of the Jordan. That's land.
Yeah. Well, somebody else who converted could have land someplace else.
Not in Eretz Yisrael. That land on the other side of the Jordan is still Eretz Yisrael. It's not as elevated as the side on the west side of the Jordan River, but it is still part of Eretz Yisrael in the broader sense.
So what land is that today?
Jordan. Part of Syria. Jordan.
They gave it to Jordan.
So that's part of the original Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. 80% of Jordan today is Israel.
80%.
That created Jordan.
Now, the, yeah.
I want to make sure we have the definition of convert, but she was saying when people converted, you know, the goal was assimilation. But if somebody converts, according to halacha, they're supposed to just take on, you know, Yiddishkeit and observe Shabbos and, you know, et cetera.
No, when I say assimilation, I mean, I don't mean the way we use it today to mean to go off the derech. I mean assimilating into the Jewish people. The term assimilation means that although we may have different ancestry, but eventually we all become one big, one.
It's a good thing to assimilate if somebody
within the Jewish people.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm pointing out to you that it will never a convert can never fully assimilate, because the sons will never have a plot in Eretz Yisrael ever, no matter how many generations go by. So they can't fully assimilate into the Jewish people in that way. You know, it's always known. If your son is going to school with another boy and that boy is a 20th generation convert, they know that he's a convert.
So why if he's being treated so badly?
They're not treated badly. That's the rule. That's not being treated badly. That's the rule. You can't have land unless you commit a righteous law. That's not a punishment. That's just the way it is. But the Torah is commanding us not to treat him badly because of the danger.
Kohanim and the Levim didn't have land either.
That's true. Yeah. But they were Kohanim and Levim. A convert can never be a Kohen or Levi either.
They lived in Yerushalayim.
It's true. Not only Yerushalayim. They did not only live in Yerushalayim. They lived throughout Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah.
But it's still different. A Kohen or Levi has a status.
But it's not the same.
You're not the only ones. You can dress it up. It's not going to help.
I'm not dressing it up.
No, I'm saying okay.
No, they also deny.
Yeah, but they were considered special. If your son was associated with a Kohen, you were proud of it because he worked in the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, it's this very special thing. A convert doesn't ever get that either. They can never work in the Beis HaMikdash. They're never going to become Kohen. They're never going to become Levim.
But Levim had their own cities. They lived in.
All right. I'm just saying, there's no way to dress this up, to accept it, and understand that the Torah's view of how things work is not according to our culture in the United States. Our culture in the United States is therefore wrong. It's incorrect. And the proper way is the Torah's way. And we end up with the understanding that you always know what their lineage is. That never changes. And therefore, the Torah constantly warns us to make sure to treat them properly. You have a question?
If the Jewish people had stayed in Eretz Yisrael, and the generations came down and down over hundreds, thousands of years, the amount of land an individual would have
is smaller and smaller.
It would be a postage stamp.
It would be smaller and smaller. We know that Eretz Tzvi, the land, expands. So I'm not sure how it would work. We'd all have to fit there.
And this status is more agrarian. It has that status is more of value if they're agrarian. If he ends up being a nuclear physicist, what does he need land for?
Yeah, yeah. You're making an assumption that there will be such a thing as a nuclear physicist once the world goes the way it's supposed to be. And then we won't become agrarian again.
I mean, today, if we had been...
Yeah, today, but had we kept the Torah, I don't know that today would ever be. don't know if there would ever be such a thing as a nuclear physicist. Okay. That's a nice thing to consider, and you know, to consider philosophically. I don't know. Yeah.
So when you say that the Kohen and Levi has a special status, I've heard that the righteous convert is on a higher level.
Yeah, you can talk about that spiritually. I'm talking about practically the way people live. I'm not discussing whether the convert is a good or bad person. I'm discussing practically speaking. Everybody knows this person is a convert. And therefore, if you want to be bigoted, you can. The Torah has to warn you, don't be bigoted, because you can always point out a convert. Well, I'm not discussing, in a spiritual manner what's going on. Talking about your boys are in school. If one wants to bully the other one and say, you're just a convert, they can say that.
That's a sad commentary on us, Rabbi.
It's humanity. That's the way the world works.
Of course it is. The Torah is dealing
with reality. The Torah is telling you
that it's okay to bully someone.
No, I didn't say that. Neither of you are listening to what we're saying. I'm asking you to listen to what we're saying. Don't be you are investing into this something which I did not say, and Torah is not saying. I am pointing out to you, practically speaking, that no matter how many generations go by, you can always point out the convert. It's not like in America, where after three or four generations, you don't know where they came from. That's not the way it works. The Torah is saying you will always be able to point out the convert. Therefore, since you can, and since human beings will naturally be bigoted, the Torah tells you, don't be bigoted. Make sure that you treat them properly. That's what I'm trying to tell you. You can talk about spiritually, you can talk about it. I'm telling you, practically speaking, the Kohanim have a higher status, the Levim have a higher status, and the Gerim never have land. That's practically what happens. You got to deal with the reality.
So human nature being what it is, it also can be very, very good. And you give just so total respect to that person that they have that wisdom and justice.
Okay, that's what the Torah is telling you to do. That's what the Torah is telling you to do. But let's not forget that the Torah has to warn you about it for a reason.
We are human.
Right. Right. Now, all that being said, we never got to the punchline. All that being said, it seems from the Pesukim in Yechezkel, at least according to some ways of reading it, that when Mashiach comes and the land is divided up, it will not be divided up according to the way it was divided up at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. That it is divided up in a different manner. That's what it appears. And it appears that the Gerim have land. In which case, the whole system changes. So that everything we said until now becomes a moot point once we get to Eretz Yisrael for the last time and the land is redivided. If that's the case, then of course all this becomes a moot point. But the reason why I brought it up to you is because the Torah warns about this many, many times over again. And if you put yourself in the shoes of a people that would have kept the Torah for hundreds and thousands of years, as we should have, then this would have been a very, very important rule to know, because it could easily fall apart. Now, ona'a, which means, as it's being said here, to taunt or to put down with words, includes any kind of words that are hurtful. So, ona'as devarim, which means to hurt somebody with words, ranges from a person calling another person a name, any kind of pejorative, whatever it is, you know, or making a person remember things from the past that they'd rather forget. That's also. So you're not allowed to say to a convert that something to the effect of, well, you know, I know that, you know, 10 years ago you used to worship pagans. Right? That's not a nice thing to say. Even if you respect the convert for having converted, but to talk about how the person used to worship paganism, that is ona'as devarim. And anything in between, anything which is putting somebody down. It is usur, it's prohibited to do ona'as devarim to any fellow Jew, not just the convert. But the Torah warns about it particularly with a convert because a convert is more vulnerable for the reasons that we already said before.
Is that with an ayin, ona'as?
No, with an aleph. Aleph, is with an aleph. Two alephs, actually. Aleph vav nun aleph hay. The pasuk lamed al 34, kezrach mikem yelachem agar itchem, like one of you, one of the how do they say it here? One of the...
A native.
Natives, thank you. Right, an Ezrach is a native, thank you. Like one of you natives, should be to you the convert that is sojourning with you. You shall love him like you love yourself. For you were converts. It doesn't mean converts here. It means you were sojourners in... What is that?
Aliens.
Aliens, okay. In Egypt. I am Hashem, your God. The Hashem emphasizes, I am Hashem, your God, that I know whether a person is going to mistreat the convert. And it says in the plural, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem, your plural, your God, y'all, all y'all, God. And therefore, as Rashi says, Elokecha Velokav Ani, I am your God, and I'm also his God. It's the same God. So therefore, treat him properly. Pasuk Lamehi, verse 35, Lo sasu avo b'mishpat, do not do an iniquity, a
perversion,
injustice. So this means when you judge, make sure you judge honestly. Bamida, in measurement, b'mishkol, in weights, uvamesura, and in liquid volume. This means mida is measuring land, mishkol is weighing something, as it sounds like, and mesura would be liquid volume to see how much something is. Chazal tell us that here the Torah is calling a person who is measuring something a judge. That means that I come to your store, I want to buy a pound of flour, and you weigh that pound of flour. If your scale is off in order to cheat me, so obviously it's cheating. But it's also considered to be a perversion of justice. You are considered like a judge. And if you pervert the measurements, that is called a perversion of justice. Which, what does that matter? I mean, anyway, it's cheating. What difference does it make if the Torah calls it a perversion of justice or just cheating? Cheating is bad also. The answer is because when a judge perverts justice, there are many punishments that come on top of that judge and on top of Klal Yisrael as a whole for the perversion of justice. Justice being perverted is something which Hashem takes extremely seriously and does not stand for that kind of behavior. So when a person, a regular person, says, I'm not a judge, I'm just a regular person, I'm a storekeeper, I'm just measuring things, the Torah says, understand that if you're measuring, you have a status of a judge, and therefore you must make sure to measure honestly. And that's true when weighing something, when figuring out a volume of something, or when measuring distance, which also happens if you're selling land, if you're a surveyor, or something of that nature. And the Torah goes on to make it more specific, Lamed Vav 35, Moz Neit Tzedek, Av Neit Tzedek, Eifas Tzedek, Vihin Tzedek, Yelachem. You have to have righteous weights and measures. Now here, these words, there are four words here, Mosne, Avne, Ephas, and Hin. So the way that they have it over here is Mosne are scales. That's the first one. Avne are actually stones, but it's weights. Epha is a dry measure, and a Hin is a liquid measure. So you have to have honest scales, weights, and measures. Yilachem, you should have that. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God. Asher Hotzeisi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that took you out of the land of Egypt, as Rashi says, I took you out on this condition. I only took you out on condition that you will be honest with weights and measures. And finally, to finish off this paragraph, Ushmartem es kol chukosai, you shall guard all of my statutes, ves kol mishpatai, and all my laws, v'asisem osam, you shall do them, ani Hashem, I am Hashem. The Gemara tells us on the words hin tzedek. The word hin tzedek. What does the word hin tzedek mean? So the simple meaning is that it's a liquid measure. So you have to have an honest liquid measure. It has to measure properly. However, the Gemara expounds upon this. Shehein shalcha tzedek. Your hein should be righteous, should be honest. What does hein mean? Hain means yes. Your yes should be honest. And your no should be honest. In other words, you should tell the truth. We know the Torah says, Midvar sheker, tirchak, stay away from a lie. Here the Torah says it in a positive, that you should, your yes and your no must be honest, must be righteous. And from here we derive the one of the places in the Torah, we derive the Torah's commandment to be honest. A person could say, it's just a small lie. No one's really going to, not really going to affect anything. I'm not cheating anybody. I'm just telling a little bit of a lie. And Torah says, you can't do that. She'ehein shal chad tzedek, your yes should be honest.
Cheating yourself.
Okay, cheating yourself. Good, good. That is true. That is true. So the Torah demands honesty from us, not just in weights and measures, but in the way we speak as well. Yeah.
Story of the Chavetz Chaim, he had a store. Zayn machmir about checking the weights and the scales. You were always honest in the Chavetz Chaim.
Yeah.
Of course, in the Torah portion we read, it talks about how Hashem told a little white lie regarding...
Yeah, he didn't lie. He left out information. Right? He misled. That's a little bit different. But you're right.
Well, he said,
you're not supposed to do that either.
Your husband or you.
Yeah.
Or
you're not supposed to do that either. It's true.
But we're told that there, we
that
should do it.
For shalom. For shalom, that one can bend the truth a little bit for shalom. That is true. That is true. Now, this is not an isolated incident, but this is where I witnessed it. In Baltimore, I was once in the butcher shop. And Rabbi Yaakov Hapfer, one of the great rabbanim in Baltimore, came in to check the kashrus of the butcher shop. Butcher shop, honest people, they run the shop. They're fine, upstanding from Jews. But he came in to give the hechsher on the shop. And I was there. I happened to be there when he walked in the store. So he walked by the counter. And before he went to the back of the store to look at the meat and to look at the packaging and all that, he picked up a knife that was sitting on the counter and he put it on one of the scales, noted what it said. Then he took it off and put it on the other scale and noted what it said and made sure that the two scales said the same thing. That was the first thing he checked when he walked in the store. Because if they're not keeping honest weights and measures, then you can't really trust their kashrus either. If a person's not going to be honest in business, then they're not honest. If they're dishonest, then how do you trust them to eat the food that they are claiming is kosher? But that's, as I said, it's not isolated. It's not an isolated incident. It's a common practice that the kashrus agencies depending on who's doing the checking, but sometimes they will check the weights and measures as well to make sure that they're calibrated properly. Pasuk Aleph, on to Perakov chapter 20, Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, Hashem speaks to Moshe saying, V'al b'nei Yisrael tomar, to the Jewish people you shall say, Ish ish mi b'nei Yisrael, each man from the Jewish people, u'min agera gar b'Yisrael, and the converts that sojourn in the Jewish people, Asher yitein mizaro la'molech, that will give his child to the molech, talk about that in a minute, Most you must, he shall be put to death. Am ha'aretz yir gemuhu va'avin, the people of the land shall stone him, shall hit him with stones. Stone him with stones. Vani atenes panai bo'ishahu, and I will put my attention on that man. V'ichrati osom mikerav amon, I will cut him off from the midst of his nation. Ki mizaro nasan la'molech, for his seed he gave to the molech. Leman tameis mikdashi, in order to profane my Mikdash. Now, Mikdash means my temple. Here, the word Mikdash is referring to the Jewish people. To profane my Jewish people, ulechalel Hashem kadshi, and to make my name mundane. He is defiling the Jewish people and profaning my name by giving of his child to the Molech. V'imhalem yalimu am ha'aretz eseinehem ino yishahu. And if the people of the land will hide their eyes from this man, when he gives his seed to the Molech, that they do not put him to death. In other words, if his community decides, we'll turn a blind eye. We're not going to get involved in this. He's doing the wrong thing, but we're not going to do anything about it. Then V'samti anias panai bo yishahu v'mishpachto. I will put my attention on this man and on his family. V'yichrati oso, and I will cut him off. V'yiz kol azonim acharav, and all those who stray after him. Liznos acharei hamolech, to stray after the molech mikerav hamam, from the midst of their nation. The molech, what exactly is the molech? So the molech is a form of avodah zarah, form of paganism, in which fires are lit, big fires are lit, and a person gives their child to the priests of the molech. Now, the description of the molech is in the Gemara. There's two different ways that it's described. The less gruesome way that it's described is simply that the child is given to the priest and the child is carried between the two bonfires as a way of, so to speak, giving over the child to the pagan deity. The more gruesome way is actually burning the child. Right. That's the more gruesome way. Either way, what is happening is the person is giving over their child to the molech, to this avodah zara.
Why did they do that?
Why would they do that? Okay, that is the good question. Good. That's exactly what we want to get to. I just want to read you one thing. Let me see if I can find it quickly. Hold on 1 minute, please.
That was the way the pagan culture, they did that.
Yes, yeah, but we're going to talk about what was the draw to do that. Yeah. It's not only a child. It's any member of the family that a person might do this to. The primary one that a person did it to was their own child, but it could also be other family members. Gemara discusses that one of the sages of the Gemara saw a pagan person take his parent and give him over to the molech. Now, what would be the draw to do this? So the draw to do this would be, and this is appropriate to talk about this immediately after yesterday's parsha. Yesterday's parsha, Parshas Vayera, ended with Akedas Yitzchak, where Avram was told to give over, to slaughter Yitzchak as an offering to Hashem. Avraham was greatly tested by that command. Simply, the test was because here it's his son, and any parent that is asked to slaughter their own son, it's virtually impossible to do it. It's everybody loves their children, and to be asked to slaughter one's own child for Hashem would entail a great deal of self-sacrifice. But moreover, this is Abraham's only son from Sarah. Moreover, this is the son that he waited for so long. He was 100 years old when he was born. Moreover, this is the son through which Abraham's legacy is meant to be passed. And it's meant to go on through this Yitzchak, who is growing to be, he's 37 years old at this time, and he's growing to become the heir to Avraham, not only materially, but also spiritually, the heir to Avraham. And he's being asked to slaughter his son. What's going to be with the future of the Jewish people if there's no Yitzchak? But even more so, what makes the test for Avraham so difficult is that Avraham has, all his life, ever since he realized it himself, has been going around and spreading the word of monotheism and talking about Hashem, and talking about how paganism is bankrupt, and talking about how paganism is false, and it's a lie, and there is no such thing, and idolatry is terrible, and Hashem is what you have to believe in. And the idolaters often had practices in which they would give over their children to the pagan deity. What is the symbolism in that? Because a person is taking that which is most dear to them and giving over that which is most dear to the service of God. That's what's so enticing about this worship. Meaning as follows. We who live in a world that is post the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, you thought that, right? Post the men of the Great Assembly, the ones who took away the drive for Avodah Zarah, the drive for idolatry. So for us, as we've mentioned many times before, our struggle is not whether to worship Hashem or whether to worship an idol. We all realize idols are silly. Idols are stupid. That we realize that. We understand that. But our struggle is, do you worship or do you not worship? That's our struggle. That's the struggle of today. To worship or to be secular. That's the struggle of today. That's because we don't have a drive for Avodah Zarah. We don't have a drive for paganism, for idolatry. But before the men of the Great Assembly, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, removed that drive from within us, then that was the burning desire everybody had, to worship idols. That was the burning desire. And we are told in the Gemara that had we lived at that time, we would not be able to control ourselves. We would pick up our clothing, the hem of our clothing, we would run to the nearest altar to offer a sacrifice to the pagan god. That's what we would do. We wouldn't be able to control ourselves. The desire was so overwhelming to do that. In a world like that, then there is a drive to take one's own child and show how devoted one is to the deity. I am so devoted, I would even give that which is most precious to me, which is my own child. I would even give that, the one who is the heir of me, perhaps my only child, the one who is going to carry on my legacy, even that, where it is the greatest, what means the most to me in the world, I will give that person over to the deity, to the pagan deity. That is a form of showing devotion. And people were driven to do that. It's something people wanted to do. It was the most, quote-unquote, pious of the pagans who wanted to do that. But it was a drive. Therefore, there was a danger that the more religious one became, the more devoted to Hashem that one became, one might be tempted to give over their child to show their devotion. It was a way of being completely and totally subservient to Hashem or to any false god. So when Avraham is told to take Yitzchak and slaughter him, it flies against everything that Avraham has been preaching, that is false, that is silly. There's no such thing as slaughtering a human being, certainly not your own child. It doesn't exist. And then Avraham himself is told, go and do just that. And he knew that it was Hashem speaking to him. He understood it was Hashem. And therefore, to go and do it anyway, that for him was an incredibly difficult test. You find this with almost all the tests of Avraham, perhaps all of them. You find that it is the contrast that makes it so difficult. He's told to leave Haran, Lech Lecha, and go to Eretz Canaan. He gets to Eretz Canaan, and immediately there's a famine. And he has to turn around and leave Eretz Canaan. Do you want me here or do you not want me here? That's what one could be tempted to say. One could grumble about that. Avraham didn't grumble. He got to Eretz Canaan. Okay, I got to Eretz Canaan. Now Hashem wants me to go to Mitzrayim. Fine, that's what he wants me to do. I do whatever Hashem tells me to do. But the struggle is that one can have their own sense of self and say that, what do you mean? You want me here or not want me here? What is this? Which is a need to understand. Avram could have said, I have to understand. What do you mean? You're just sending me around in circles for no reason? Go here, go there. What is this? But Avram never questioned that. This is the greatest contrast. You want me to preach about monotheism and how paganism is ridiculous and how human sacrifice is terrible, and then you want me to go do it myself? That's what he could have said, but he didn't. That was the tremendous struggle of Avraham. Here the Torah is addressing giving over a human being to the pagan deity. And it was something that was a drive. You see, there's a lot of psukim here, many verses addressing this point. And not only did the psukim address this point, the psukim even address the community might choose to turn a blind eye. That means, let's think about that for a minute. If the community itself is doing the same thing, then they're just as liable. If the community itself are also giving over their children to the Molech, then they're just as bad as the other person is doing it. So the reason why the community should get punished is because they're all doing it. That's not what the Torah says. The Torah says there's one person who's giving over their child to the Molech. The community is not doing it, the rest of the community. But they turn a blind eye. Why would they turn a blind eye? Why wouldn't they prosecute the person? Why not? If the person would be doing another type of sin, the person would be a thief, wouldn't the community prosecute that person? If the person would be desecrating Shabbos, wouldn't they prosecute the person? If the person were committing murder, wouldn't they prosecute the person? So here the person is giving over his child to the Molech, which in some versions is murder, and yet they would turn a blind eye. Why would they turn a blind eye? Because the drive is so great that even the community that's not actually doing it themselves, they can be sympathetic to someone who's doing it. They can say, okay, I understand where he's coming from. I get it. I have the drive also. Maybe I'm not doing it myself, but I understand where he's coming from. I can appreciate it. I understand how hard it is not to do it. And therefore, I can't bring myself to go prosecute the person. I understand. Torah says, no, you have to prosecute the person. And Torah says, if you don't prosecute the person, I'm going to come after the whole community, says Hashem. Because you got to prosecute the person. You can't let this practice go on. But the reason why, I'm just showing you how pervasive this drive was. It was so strong that even those who weren't doing it could be very much tempted to not prosecute it. Let it go. We'll deal with other averos, but this will let go. So the Torah has to tell you, no, you got to prosecute it. You can't let it go. Now, I would tell you that in the world we live in, we're not in a position to prosecute anybody about anything. We don't have that kind of authority. But we sometimes do have some influence over behavior. And we do exercise that influence at times. When people behave in a manner that we all agree is horrific, we as a community make it clear that that behavior is unacceptable. My Rosh Yeshiva of Weinberg's Chacham Racha used to explain, I've told this to you before, that the death penalty, the reason why the death penalty is a deterrent for crime, is not because a person who's considering committing that crime is afraid of the punishment. It's not that since murder is punishable with death, therefore, if I'm really, really angry at somebody, I'm not going to pull the trigger because I'm afraid if I do that, then I'm going to be put to death. He argued that rarely deters someone from acting out whatever crime they want to commit. Because when they're ready to commit the crime, the drive to commit the crime is so strong, it pushes out the fear of consequences. Rather, the reason why the death penalty is a deterrent is because it sends a message that society will not tolerate this behavior. When you send the message that society does not tolerate the behavior, that is something that is a much stronger deterrent than the fear of death. Because the fear of being ostracized is a much greater fear than the fear of death. The fear of being the on the outs with the community is a much greater fear than the fear of death. And therefore, it acts as a deterrent. In his discussion, he pointed out that if you make the death penalty so almost, quote-unquote, innocuous, to the point where, first of all, it takes decades before it actually is carried out. And when it's carried out, it's done in a private and painless manner, then it takes away from the whole message, which is this is not acceptable. That we exercise this influence of projecting a message that this is not acceptable. When is the last time you saw somebody smoking in a public place indoors? So you'll say, well, it's illegal. I would say back, so what? A lot of people do things that are illegal, but you still don't see it. Why don't you see it? Because society doesn't tolerate it. It's not that many years ago when it was easily tolerable. Mm-hmm. Everybody tolerated it. Mm-hmm. But society doesn't tolerate it. If you do it, you're looked at like you are a nothing. Like you are like the lowest of the low. What are you doing? What are you doing? That's the way that we look at someone if they would smoke indoors in a public place. That's the way we treat people like that. We don't have to actually say something, but the way that we look at the person, the way that we turn away, the way the message we send is, that's just not acceptable. That we just don't do that. People who are willing to use foul language in our settings, I'm not talking about the world at large, but in our settings, you don't find that. You don't find that in our settings. And it's not because it isn't nice. A lot of things aren't nice and people do them anyway. People speak Lashon Hara, even though it's not nice, but people do it. But the reason is because we don't tolerate it. We say, that's just not acceptable. It's not cool. We don't look at it as something acceptable in our society. Therefore, people don't do it. And there are many, many examples like that. That we don't tolerate it as a society. Rabbi Feldman right now is trying to make sure that talking in shul becomes like smoking indoors in a public place. That's what he's trying to do. He's trying to get us as a shul to project the message, it's simply unacceptable. Period. It's just not acceptable. That's what he's trying to get us to project. Without wagging our finger at anybody. Without just the fact that people look at it as a terrible thing to do, that makes it not be done. There are things that go on that people do in our society that are wrong, but we as a community don't look at it as intolerable, and therefore it continues to go on. Lashon Hara is a very good example. When anybody spoke Lashon Hara, the person would be looked at like they are the lowest of the low, then they wouldn't do it. But that's not usually the reception a person who speaks Lashon Hara gets. There are individuals who will turn away, walk away, but by and large, when a person speaks Lashon Hara, they are not looked at as being the lowest of the low. And therefore it goes on. It can happen. Because we don't project that sense of intolerance. And intolerance is a very powerful tool. And it should be used for behavior that is wrong. Sometimes the reason why we're not willing to project that intolerance is because we know that we do the same thing. And we know that we're also weak and just as susceptible to the Yetzer Hara as this person is. I know I also speak Lashon Hara sometimes. So for me to project the message is intolerable. But who am I kidding? I know where they're coming from. I know why they're speaking Lashon Hara. They're upset. They're angry. I get it. I've been there too. So it's hard to project intolerance for something when we're involved in it too. That's very hard to do. The Torah is saying over here that the Molech was something that was a danger that people would not project intolerance for, because they all, even if they weren't actually doing it, they got it. They felt the draw. They felt that, I really perhaps would want to do it. So I'm holding back, but I can understand where they're coming from. And that's where it's hard to project intolerance. Therefore, the Torah has to tell us, has to warn us, that if you turn a blind eye, then you're it's dangerous for the community. It's worthwhile to examine what types of things that today that go on that we don't project intolerance for. Again, when I say projecting intolerance, I'm not talking about wagging fingers or slapping or or just it's just a question of attitude of what are you doing? Like it's that kind of attitude. And there are many things that we project that for. And many things we do it, many things society does it for. Sometimes society does it in the wrong way. In the wrong way. So, for example, we're being recorded, but we're going to go down from posterity for this one. So, for example, if someone is involved in an intimate relationship that is prohibited by the Torah, the world at large will accept that person and say everything is fine. And in fact, if anybody speaks out against it, that person is shouted down. That person is looked at as a terrible person. But it's just the opposite. It's just the opposite. We're supposed to project an intolerance for that sort of thing. Again, intolerance doesn't mean beat the person up. Intolerance means it means projecting a sense of, you just don't behave that way. You just don't do it. It's just, what are you doing? That's what intolerance is. And that's a very powerful tool which really should be projected at times. Depends on what we're talking about. So the Torah here is concerned with the problem of molech. Now, it is not coincidental that the word molech has the same letters as the word melech, which means
king,
right? Because here also, when a person is giving over their own child to the deity, that is a way of essentially crowning the deity as king. That this is the king. This is the one I'm giving everything I have, everything dear to me, I give over to the king, to the one who is in charge. Pasuk Vav verse 6. Va'nefesh asher tifneh al ovos ve'la yid onim liznos achareihem. And the soul that will turn to the ovos and the yid onim. We had the ovos and yid onim recently. Two different types of sorcery involving the dead. Liznos achareihem, to stray after them. V'nasati es panai ba'nefesh ahi. I'll put my attention on that soul. V'yichrati oso mikarev amo. And I will cut it off from the midst of its nation. V'yiskadishtem, you shall become sanctified. V'yisem kidoshim, and you will be sanctified. Ki ani Hashem Elokechem, for I am Hashem, your God. That a person has to, we as a people, have to make ourselves sanctified. This is referring specifically to avoiding, staying away from idolatry. That is specifically what this verse is talking about. Sanctification means staying away from idolatry. It means staying away from immorality. Here it's particularly talking about idolatry, to stay away from that, and to that if we are mekadesh ourselves, if we sanctify ourselves, then Hashem makes sure to sanctify us as well. Okay, it's a little bit early, but we are going to stop here for the evening. And Mr. Shem, next week, start with the next, with Pasuk Ches. What's that?
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. You said people don't stand for poor behavior. But sometimes you don't want to confront somebody. Sometimes
right. You're
not sure to say, you know, that's really not right. And you just kind of give a kind of look, you know, and walk away.
Right.
So people, my experience is, you know, people want to do it, they just don't care. So once
they're
confronted, and somebody who is bigger or strong or whatever says, hey, you know, cut the talking in shul, it just keeps happening.
If the talker has no one to talk to, then they stop talking. They have to have an audience to talk to.
Right.
Right?
That's true.
So if no one wants to listen, if everybody is like, you know, I'm dominating. or
thank you.
You know, I'm listening to some, right? You know, so there's a, it's not a question of giving, of telling them, oh, you're wrong for talking. I'm busy, like, right? So if everybody has that attitude, then it stops the talking.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.